I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The award-winning broadcaster and blogger Dave Gary joins me now. He's a well-known, long-time, memorable figure in local media here in Vancouver and its surrounding area. A lot of people have asked for him to be on, and why not? Up until a couple of years ago, he was a regular fixture on Channel 13 in all of its incarnations, culminating as co-host with Simi Sarah on Breakfast Television. He was at Channel 13 for 20 years and has been in the television business for well over 30 years now. His very fine blog, Manic Tapas, is at davegary.wordpress.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Dave Gary. Good morning, Mr. Gary.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks very much for that lovely introduction.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of people have asked for me to have you on. Mm. And you've been off the air now, what, a year and a half?
Let's see. That would be the summer of the end of August 2008.
Yeah. Do you miss it at all?
You know, it's been a very odd adjustment for me because I got into broadcasting right out of university in 1976 and was, you know, steadily employed for 33 years. And then, you know, we hit this strange confluence of what's happened in the broadcast universe. And although I had watched just about everyone I'd ever known or worked with shown the revolving door at one time or another, there's always that part of you that thinks it'll never happen to you. But it did. And so now I've tried to adjust to more of a freelance existence, which is a completely different animal for me. And I don't really have a place to go 5 days a week and hang my hat. And there's a bit of that that I miss. Although I must say, getting up every morning at 4 o'clock was no picnic. And I just, after 3 years of doing it, I really didn't know how much longer I could do it. Although I certainly enjoyed, once I got to the TV station and had 10 cups of coffee and ramped myself up to warp speed, I really enjoyed, you know, the kind of camaraderie of the people that I was working with. So that's been an odd adjustment for me, I think. I feel like I'm still working in broadcasting, but I'm kind of on the fringe of it a little bit.
Yeah, so what are you doing now?
Well, right now, just coincidentally, both Simi Sarah and I are working for the community broadcast division of TELUS, because TELUS is a cable provider now in the Lower Mainland and trying to increase its reach there by signing up new subscribers. And they do a community programming end of things. I suppose it's part of their license requirement as a cable provider. So Simi and I do 2 half-hour shows a month for TELUS. It resides on the video on demand segment of the cable. If you get TELUS, you can only see it if you have TELUS. And we had to do a show called My Vancouver, and that's where it is. And so I'm out with a cameraman shooting features, just like I did for, you know, as you say, 20 or 30 years. And so it's still fun, and it's still a nice dynamic. I enjoy that dynamic of being out in the field with a camera guy or woman,
yeah,
whomever. Yeah,
it sounds like it's worth getting TELUS just for the two of you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Yeah, a lot of people really they really liked the both of you on that show, and I guess you guys were friends. I mean, she was doing, you know, I guess the hard news stuff, and were you doing that as well, or?
Well, I did hard news for the first 10 years of my career. I was a general assignment reporter, but it was all back east. It was all back in southern Ontario where I grew up. But I had a real, you know, I had a very creative kind of bent to me, and I just didn't find that general assignment reporting was doing it for me. And so after 10 years of that, I started to look elsewhere, and that's how I ended up eventually at what was at the time VU 13 down there on West 2nd Avenue. The station was owned by film director Daryl Duke. Simi Sarah, when she came in, I think she came out of Langara, the Langara journalism program, and they sat her right beside me as a rookie, and a lot of people went, oh, gee, don't put her next to Dave. He's this hardened cynic, you know. But we got along great right from the word go, and as desk mates, we kind of developed this repartee, and I at some stage we said to each other, you know, we'd be great on a show together. But it took us many, many years to convince the powers that be to put us on. Once we were on, I think we kind of clicked. But, you know, Vancouver's a very strange television market. Well, it's a strange media market. There are several broadcast entities that hold sway over everybody else. And it's like trying to climb Mount Everest with an elephant on your back to try and make a dent, mm-hmm, in those entities. And and I guess we just didn't make a big enough dent.
And your leave taking there in August of 08, that all had to do with ratings?
Well, those things are very, I don't even know how you decipher those, because when they show you the door, they always do it with that well-known catchphrase, we're going in another direction. Well, what does that mean? You're going in another direction. I mean, they kept some of the people that we had been working with, and they filled in and did the show. Certainly our ratings were not challenging those of the lead morning show in that market, which is the morning news at Global. But we had a small devoted core who really got quite vocal once they let us go. But, I think that these decisions are largely made for financial reasons. And certainly in the current broadcast world we live in, where there's all of these amalgamations and, once mighty empires are in bankruptcy protection, loyalty and things like that can sometimes go by the board in favor of a better bottom line, and it is a business. So there's a part of you that has to realize that business decisions get made.
A lot of people thought you and Simi were married. Did they ask you that a lot?
Well, I always called her my work wife.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think we had that kind of thing. She's 20 years younger than me, but she's also an old soul, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And we had very common interests and some actual common life experiences, I think, that bonded us. We both love food. We're both real foodies. There were things that had happened to us over the course of our lives that took a similar tack, and I guess that might be responsible partly for the fact that we could finish each other's sentences and do those kinds of things that old married couples tend to do. But there you go.
Yeah. Before Breakfast TV, you were doing those. I don't know how would you describe those pieces. I mean, when I remember the first time I saw Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I thought, man, this is just like Dave Gehry.
Gee, I wish I had his money.
Yeah.
Who's got more money than Larry David?
That's true. Yeah. So was that how, like? I mean, what were your how would you describe them? Were they like curmudgeon pieces? No, I guess they weren't.
Well, in the end, they were kind of almost street theater pieces in a way. I would get the premise for something that I thought I could get the public to react to, and I would go out on the street and I would establish that premise, usually with just standing in front of the camera and talking to the camera, and then I would go out to find people who could support or refute what my point of view was. And it was kind of through the give and take of that conversation that it became a little bit like street theater. And, many occasions it was just kind of a bit of fluff at the end of the newscast to give the anchors a bit of a smile so they could go out with a bit of a smile and said, see you tomorrow. And sometimes those pieces really took off. Like the occasional one would take off on some very odd arc that I couldn't have even predicted. But boy, I'll tell you, when it worked, it was really wonderful and really energizing. When you just happened to meet the right people at the right time with the right premise, and it just exploded. So that's what they became toward the end. Prior to that, I was doing stories where I would kind of drive around in the hinterland, around the Lower Mainland, and kind of go up driveways and up country lanes, and poke my nose into farmhouses and see what was going on in there, because there's a whole subculture of people indulging their private passions out there, whether it be collecting antique automobiles or rebuilding airplanes or whatever. And, if you've got your antenna tuned properly, you can find those stories. And I used to get a lot of joy out of that, too. And I did a little series called Beyond the Fringe, where I used to put those stories together into little half-hour shows. But I must say, my experience, I certainly don't have any regrets about being at that TV station. It was always, it changed owners four times while I was there. It was 23 years I was there. It changed owners four times. It must have had six general managers in the place, and every guy that comes in kind of has his vision of what he thinks the station should be. And if you were flexible enough and creative enough and you could jump through the right hoops at the right time, you could survive in that atmosphere, and would actually be very challenging and rewarding. A lot of people, of course, didn't survive. But I was very privileged that they let me alone for the most part and let me do what I thought I did best. And that's all I could really ask for, you know.
Mike McArdle's been on a few times, and I've always said that he should do a DVD of his stories. Do you own your stories? Who, I guess the station owns that? Who owns that?
No, I assume they're owned by whoever the current owner is owns the library.
Yeah.
So I mean, I have all of that material. I mean, it's in my possession. It just burned onto, you know, DVDs. So, you know, in my old age, I can look back and go, well, I can't believe they paid me to do that.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't own it. And I don't know what kind of hoops you would have to jump through in order to gain ownership of it. You know, Joe, these days where something happens and people throw it on out into cyberspace, I don't even know how you retain ownership of things these days.
Yeah.
You know, everything gets put on YouTube.
Yeah, it'd just be fun to look at Vancouver as it once was, or a few years ago even, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And some of the great people that used to be around, and, you know, I mean, I did many features with older people who were just marvelous on camera, because with age comes a certain lack of, self-consciousness. You know, older people who are secure in their years and have the wisdom of their years, I find are often terrific interviews, because they don't really give a damn what they say.
Yeah.
And they've been through it all. And they, you know, if you draw them out a little bit, you get great interviews. And there's many people like that I did features on that are gone now. And, yeah, it would be nice to, occasionally I put one in and revisit it, you know, just for my own viewing pleasure. But I don't, honestly, I don't really like looking at my own work much.
No.
No. I see all the mistakes and all the concessions I had to make in the writing and the editing and all of that kind of stuff.
The blog, that began, what, a year ago?
The blog started in September, last September.
It's a great blog because you're such a good writer.
Thanks.
You write as if you're talking, and I think that's what makes writing good.
Well, I don't know whether the blog works as well for people who don't know my voice or weren't familiar with my voice. I assume that if you read the blog and you know what I sound like, you can hear my voice while you read the blog.
Yeah.
I don't know if it works as well for people who are not familiar with you know, who I am or what I did. But the blog is a nice creative outlet, but, you know, as you know, that's also a black hole which will just kind of suck up everything you throw at it. I try not to put just every random thought on there. I try to, if I've got an interesting concept or something's happened to me, then I'll write to it. But I guess I should be feeding it more often.
I guess that's every random thought, that'd be for Twitter, I suppose.
Well, yes, but I mean, you know, we've got kids out there that, you know, who put everything on Facebook. Anything that occurs to them, and it's like, after a while, it makes for pretty pedestrian reading.
Yeah, you had a great piece on your blog a while back about hearing your father's voice after all these years. I guess he died how many years ago?
He died in 94.
Yeah, and it's astonishing to think that people nowadays wouldn't have the trouble, I guess, or maybe they would, of if their parents died hearing their voice.
Say that again?
I mean, you know, like people nowadays, because of YouTube, because of all these other things, that, you know, we probably have audio of our parents' voice.
And don't know it.
Yeah.
Yes, you're probably right.
And, I mean, I'm thinking about your kids.
Yeah.
You know, they've got all your DVDs, right?
Well, they're sitting here. I don't know what they'll do with them once I'm gone.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's only because I work in television. I assume if your dad worked in the radio business, you'd have lots of examples of that too, but you know, you can't always assume that's the case, because I remember working when I worked at the CTV affiliate in Kitchener, Ontario. This was back in the late 70s, and that little TV station was really a powerhouse of local programming. They cranked out more shows out of that station. You don't see this done anymore. I mean, it's just not done in TV stations anymore. Most TV stations do the news, and that's it. They don't do magazine shows or games or game shows or kids' shows. But that little station did everything. And one of the shows it did was a cartoon show hosted by a fellow who'd virtually become an institution in that part of southern Ontario. His name was Big Al. And I grew up as a kid watching cartoon capers with Big Al on that TV station. And eventually, as fate would have it, I ended up working at that TV station, and I'd be sitting in the cafeteria having lunch with Big Al. And Big Al always wore this electric blue cowboy suit with a big white Stetson. I mean, it was just, you know, it was like being on the Ed Sullivan Show or something. And then he died. You know, he passed away. And they said to me, we would like, because I was the entertainment reporter at the time, we'd like you to write Big Al's obit. I said, well, okay, great. I'd be honored to write Big Al's obit. So I went to the film library, and I said, give me everything you've got on Big Al. And do you know, they had nothing. The man had been on the air for probably 25 years, and they had nothing. They'd saved nothing. And I had to make the obit up out of still photographs, and there might have been a snippet of something of him waving at people from a parade. But I was stunned by that. I thought, wow, there's a legacy that was lived only in the moment. And when the moment was over, the legacy was gone. Very strange.
Yeah. I mean, it'd just be fun to go through the archive. I don't know, all the channels here in this town, and just see what's there. You know,
you know, I think that you should, well, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, don't assume there's anybody in any TV stations necessarily keeping track of archival material or indexing the video or film library.
Yeah.
They might know how to get their hands on footage of, bumper-to-bumper traffic on Highway 1 at the Fort Mann, because they're going to use that footage fairly frequently, you know, when they're writing traffic stories or something, file footage. But, you know, there's just so many people who have histories with TV stations that I'm not sure that those histories survive the people themselves, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that it keeps you humble, though.
do you think, thinking back at when you and Simi left the station, or yeah, when you were asked to leave the station?
Well, our contracts were not renewed. Technically speaking, here's what happened.
Yeah.
Our contracts were up at the end of August, and I think we kind of both thought in the pits of our stomachs that there was a very good chance those contracts would not be renewed, and they weren't renewed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just the outcry you mentioned earlier that happened online and elsewhere,
yeah,
about the two of you.
Right.
Did you think there's a desire for more local TV, say, in this market?
Well, I don't know what the programmers would tell you, because there's so much variety now in how people are entertained and what they're entertained by, and how they get that. You know, we know now that people get more of their news off the internet than they get from watching the local television station. So it's kind of shifted the entire raison d'etre for doing local programming. You know, unfortunately, the reality is that local programming, though it may be admirable and may serve the community well, doesn't necessarily, and quite frequently, never makes the TV station money. And sometimes, well, not sometimes, the reason for doing that programming is usually because the CRTC has said you have to have a certain number of hours of local programming. And stations can kind of figure out how they're going to do that. But I think that 20 years ago, they threw much more resources and much more money at that type of programming. Nowadays, they try and do that the most economic way they possibly can, because a lot of television entities are fighting for their very survival. They don't have $1 million a year to throw at a local television show. They just, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Now, this thing that you're doing with Simi on TELUS,
yeah,
it's video on demand. Do you guys work together?
Well, we do. We see each other about once a week. I mean, we communicate more than that because we have email and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she does features for that half-hour show, and I do features for that half-hour show, and there are other people involved with the production unit at TELUS that contribute as well. And then about once a week or so, we get together in a location, and she introduces the stories, and I come on at the end of the show kind of to help her sum up that show. And I also do a streeter for every show as well. So usually coming out of my streeter package, and I'll be sitting there with her, and then we talk. But it's not, you know, it's certainly not the same as being in the middle of the, crucible that is daily morning television.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, boy, if anything will cement you, that will do it.
Can you do a shout out to my friend Jay? She's the one who's been lobbying to get you on here. So
Jay Todd. Jay Todd.
Yeah.
Well, hi, Jay.
Thanks. She'll really appreciate that.
Will she?
She'll go crazy listening to this.
People are very kind. I always have people. Part of the adjustment for me, Joe, has been when people come up to you and say, boy, I really enjoyed you when you were on the air, or I really miss you guys because you're not on the air anymore. That's really gratifying, but I must tell you that after you hear that for a couple of years, there's a little sad part of you that is always wounded a bit.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear the praise, but it's also like, well, geez, you know, I guess we did a good job. They never tell you when you get into broadcasting that getting out of broadcasting is can really be just a major league steamroller of your ego, and boy, is it ever!
Yeah,
because it's very hard to detach. I mean, it's hard to, unless you go and live, you know, in a cave somewhere where no one's ever seen you. You're going to get that for months and months and months. Oh, geez, really miss you. Well, you know, it's hard. Therefore, it's hard for you to leave that behind sometimes. You know, and you do have to leave it behind.
Or you could go on do the news at 6 o'clock at the CBC.
Yes. Opportunities to do. I was speaking the other day to a class of people at the Columbia Academy, the broadcast school.
Yeah.
On Broadway, and I said, you should maybe have an exit strategy if you're going to get into this business. Nobody ever thinks about that. But boy, wouldn't it be good if you had some plumbing skills or something to fall back on? Because when you, as a broadcaster who makes your living writing and talking, when that job disappears, you find out how few other skills you really have. I mean, you know, you can't just go and get a job roofing or something like that. I mean, it's just you may not have a lot of other interests or done much else with your life other than devoted it to that craft. I don't really understand why people keep going into their 70s. I guess it's because they just don't have anything else to do, or they wouldn't know what to do with themselves in retirement. I have other interests and other things I love to do, and I'm a sculptor, and I do other creative things that I would like to do when I'm done with broadcasting. So I don't think it'll be a horrific severance of my entity, my identity, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Dave, you're good to do this, and it's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks for phoning me up and chatting. That's great.
It's been a pleasure. The, okay. the great blog is at davegary.wordpress.com. It's called Manic Tapas. Do check it out, because if you've missed Dave, as a lot of us have, you can see him there or hear him there. And it's just great writing as well. Dave Gary on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.